Hello and welcome to this late night reaction edition of the 538 Politics podcast. I'm Galen Druk. We've just wrapped the first 2020 presidential debate between Trump and Biden. And like much of the Trump presidency, it was norm breaking. During large portions of the debate, Trump prevented the pre-agreed structure of the debate from happening by interrupting Biden and the moderator, Chris Wallace. The president spread conspiracy theories, including about the integrity of the election, and again did not agree to a peaceful transfer of power. He also declined to condemn white supremacist groups, telling one white supremacist group to stand back and stand by. We all just live blogged this debate, and so we were dealing with the irregularities of it in real time. People can go read those on 538.com, but here to podcast our reactions as well, our 538 editor-in-chief, Nate Silver. Hey, Nate.
Hey, Galen.
Also here with us is senior politics writer Claire Malone. Hey, Claire.
Hey, Galen.
And managing editor Micah Cohen. Hey, Micah.
Hey, Galen. Hey, everybody.
So I don't have any particularly pointed questions out of the gate, but I am curious to get your reactions to what we all just watched. Nate, if you want to kick us off.
I wasn't surprised by it. It seemed to reflect a lot of things the president has said in recent days. It seemed to be a lot of his inner monologue, like you see in his Twitter feed sometimes. It seemed like the strategy of a candidate who isn't happy with his position in the race. I was also not surprised that Joe Biden, I don't think, was super sharp, especially in the first half of the debate, although I thought he did get quite a bit better in the second half of the debate. He seemed at times a little bit rattled by not being able to kind of complete his thoughts, although he adjusted to it a little bit. I'm not surprised that Trump refused to kind of denounce white supremacy. I'm not surprised that Trump refused to kind of say he would respect the results of the election. I'm not surprised that Trump was not talking to people in the audience or at home, but kind of, again, engaged in his own headspace. I'm not surprised that he attacked the moderation. I'm not surprised that there was this kind of both sides-ism from a lot of the commentary afterward. I'm not sure what I was really expecting, but I don't think any of it was surprising, given the campaign and the presidency that we witnessed for 4 years.
Yeah, I guess to tack on to what Nate said, I mean, if you're any kind of paying attention to the news or to Twitter, everything that Trump said, he said before, with, I guess, the exception of like the in-the-moment jabs against Biden. I think the big thing that people watching at home will probably take away from it is just the chaotic, impolitic, on a personal conversational level that the debate was. I mean, it was just a really chaotic thing to watch. It was hard, particularly the first half, to get any kind of sense of what either of them were trying to say, because Trump was interrupting so much during Biden's time. And as Nate said, Biden, you know, wasn't completing the full thought because Trump was throwing him off with interruptions. Biden, towards the second half of the debate, kind of started to just do this thing where he would speak to camera or kind of laugh uncomfortably along with, frankly, the moderator, Chris Wallace, whenever Trump would interrupt. But it was just like kind of a devolved spectacle and sort of bizarre to watch, frankly. It just felt like a very, I think, you know, we were all probably talking 4 years ago at the same time about how unnerving and weird the 2016 debates were, when Trump kind of, you know,
this was a whole different level. Like the 2016 presidential debates were more or less debates,
right?
At certain points, this wasn't a debate.
Yeah, I mean, it was just, you know, that was, oh, the sort of, there were a lot of, you know, think pieces about the menacing body language of Trump versus, you know, when he kind of came around behind Hillary Clinton. This was just flat out, the first 20 minutes were kind of incoherent. You couldn't figure out what they were talking about. Chris Wallace asking Trump to take things seriously when they talked about COVID. I mean, it was honestly bizarre. Like, the way Wallace was treating Trump was completely bananas. And we haven't even gotten to some of the substantive stuff where, like, I can't remember everything that was said, frankly. Like, Biden said, "You're the worst president America's ever had." Trump said something about, don't talk about smart around me. There was just like a lot of weird stuff.
Yeah, so let me throw, I'm going to throw in the spirit of the evening a few kind of unrelated takeaways out, but I'll do them quickly so we can get through them quickly. I might be grasping for something new to say, but I do think that Trump and the comparison to 2016 debates bears this out, I believe. I do think Trump is more erratic, more willing to break with norms, less concerned about what's quote-unquote expected of him than he has been at earlier points. And key difference between now and 2016, he's president. So it puts it in an entirely different context. But I do think tonight's debate made clear that his back is against a wall, and rather than try to implement a strategy to come back, he's just kind of following his gut instinct.
The stuff at the end about the results of the election, I think that's where Trump and Biden's styles kind of came out most starkly, where Biden kind of did, again, this look to camera kind of soothing voice about your votes will count, make sure you vote, I'll accept the results of the election if I win or lose. You know, kind of like a coherent thing, which he'd obviously practiced because he knew this was going to happen. And Trump's was, I think Wallace said, will you tell your supporters to accept the results of the election peacefully? And Trump had trouble answering that Fed line from Wallace. I mean, it was the softest of softballs, and he couldn't answer that. And it was just such a, it was so stark.
It's stark, and that's what I was thinking of in particular, Claire. It's like that part was really scary. Just a couple more thoughts. I would echo what Nate said at the top. I thought Biden was a little off balance for the first 20 minutes. I think he got better as the debate went on. I thought his best moments were when he just spoke straight to camera, like Claire was describing, and probably gave a somewhat rehearsed answer. But at least it was like, you know, as a viewer, you're sort of just like grasping for any full sentence, right? That's like what you wanted to hear. So those moments, I think were his better moments. And then finally, you know, on the moderation of the debate by Chris Wallace was maybe to me the most interesting part, just in the sense that the rest of it was such a mess. But, you know, parts of it, Wallace really broke with kind of norms in response to Trump breaking with norms to try to keep Trump from further derailing the whole thing.
It took a while to get there, though.
But yeah, he didn't do the newscast. Like, I feel like you could see another network newscaster kind of doing the newscastery thing where they kind of try to, you know, right. Like, and Wallace was kind of just like almost commiserating with Biden at points about like, yeah, he keeps like, it's, I'm having trouble keeping up myself. Like, it was just the tone of it was so different.
And it took him too long to get there. Although I'm sympathetic. Like, you know, it's obviously a somewhat new situation. But then also, but eventually he did get there, and he was fairly aggressive in calling out Trump in particular, and not resorting to, which he did a couple times, but then largely stayed away from, just like both sides. I think the American people want a more substantive debate, or gentlemen, if you could both, right? He largely avoided that in regards to interruptions, but then there were a lot of questions which were like both sides, the like worst parody of both sides journalism, where like the election integrity question in particular was sort of a silly framing as both sides, as if both candidates present equal threats to election integrity.
Micah, I was wondering during that segment if it was wrong to even have that as a debate topic, because it provides the opportunity to spread misinformation about the voting process, which could be deleterious to our democracy, right? Like, if the thing isn't up for debate, right? Like, if we either kind of have a democracy where we respect the results of an election or we don't, why give people the opportunity to undermine the legitimacy of the election?
Well, and it was weird. And look, there are like legitimate questions and concerns about how the country and how the 50 states and DC are going to adjust to a largely mail-in election in a time of coronavirus. The problem is, I don't think the debate was the right time to sort of adjudicate those questions and concerns, because you knew that's not what was going to happen. And even trying to get to those concerns, which I think is what Wallace was trying to do, as you say, Galen, just provides a platform for these baseless conspiracy theories about rigging the election. So I think it was a misguided topic from the beginning.
Nate, I know you wanted to talk earlier about comparisons to 2016, and I want to hear what you have to say, but first...
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
All right, Nate, we've mentioned that this was pretty different from 2016, but you were starting to say that we're misremembering what happened back then. So how does this compare to, you know, the kind of conversation we were having 4 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, those debates were total shit shows, too. Can I say that on this podcast?
Yes.
You know, I don't think they were particularly more traditional. I mean, you had Trump kind of stalking Clinton around the stage. You had Trump like, I mean, yeah, I don't really think this is that much of a difference from 2016, except Trump is kind of not really even kind of maintaining the pretense of it being a regular debate, but he didn't really do that much of that anyway in 2016. I mean, there is, you know, we've been watching this president now as a candidate for 6 years, roughly, candidate and or president for 6 years now, right? President Trump. Like, none of this comes out of left field. You know what I mean? Did we all think that it was just going to kind of come back to normal now? That
of course not. But it's also striking to see it on television.
Right. I mean, it's still odd to see. But a point of comparison would be the Republican National Convention that we all just watched and covered. And for example, his final formal acceptance night speech. I mean, it was off of a teleprompter, obviously, but it was a kind of very, 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 very tempered version of Donald Trump. And so there are moments when tens of millions of people are potentially watching where we get a different version of Trump, and one that's not completely off the rails, like tonight.
Nate, I completely take your point that, you know, people shouldn't be surprised that it was erratic and that 2016 was, you know, its own kind of unconventional debating. I think I would say that they're just... Trump is facing two different opponents. So with Clinton, if he did the... First of all, I think that he interrupts Biden in part probably because Biden does have a history of a stutter. And, you know, Nathan Heller, who's a writer for The New Yorker, who also has a stutter, tweeted out and said that's actually a thing that, like, throws people with stutters off sometimes, right? Is that, like, if you're constantly interrupted, so, like, that's a good tactic, perhaps, if you're Trump and you're in a debate with Joe Biden. The other thing is in 2016, Trump used, you know, there's a different dynamic between a man interrupting constantly a woman, i.e. the Trump-Clinton dynamic. So I think it would have read differently. And it's more kind of, it reads better, I guess, if Trump is kind of constantly interrupting Biden. They're, like, it's just kind of like these two, we're seeing the two different strategies for the two different candidates that Trump faces, but the energy is chaotic in both debates.
Okay, guys, we got a sorry, Claire, this is a bit of a left turn, but we got a Insta poll from CBS News. Who won the debate? Nate, I think you've seen these numbers. So Claire, Galen, you want to guess the results?
Trump. I'm guessing Trump won by a wide margin.
Is it CBS?
No, this is a scientific poll.
Oh, this is a scientific poll.
Biden. Yeah.
It's not a clicker.
Claire has Biden.
I think still Trump. Did they ask for perceptions of it? I'm going to go with there were enough commentators on Twitter and maybe on some of the news networks that were calling Trump the alpha in the room that people liked that dominating
Galen's overthinking the presidency.
Galen is overthinking it. 48% Biden, 41% Trump. So although
the polls, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's important, right? Because, you know, I think we all said this already, but Trump was losing this race. So, you know, a push, if that's what this is inherently a win for Biden, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's exact margin you see in the polls. And if Biden maintains that 7-point lead through election day, then his odds will go up from where they are, 78%, to 90-some percent. Still probably have a sweat on election day. Obviously, you have to worry about will Trump respect the results and what that means. But tactically, in terms of the traditional how do you win the Electoral College strategy, then this debate was one of the more important remaining opportunities for Trump, and that poll would suggest that he didn't really take it. We'd have to see more polls. Sometimes the instant polls differ from the post-debate polls. Sometimes when the reaction gets baked in, people see clips and stuff like that, then a small lead flips, a small lead turns into a big lead, it becomes self-reinforcing, right? But there was something about tonight that went particularly well for Trump.
Yeah, I think it's important to reiterate what you said. I was looking at a political science study done around the 2004 presidential debates, and it showed they took basically an audience and they showed them the debate and then gave them two different forms of analysis afterwards. One group saw the debate and then NBC's live reaction, and then another group saw the debate and then read CNN's online coverage. And the two separate groups came to different conclusions about who won the debate. CNN online was that Kerry won. NBC live analysis was that Bush had won. So, the press obviously plays a role in how this is all perceived. We haven't seen a ton of what the press's coverage looks like so far, but what can we tell from how it's being covered?
I mean, I don't think there's a clean enough narrative coming out of the debate to really push those numbers meaningfully one way or the other. Like, the strongest takeaway that I've seen across news outlets coming out of the debate is just that was a mess. And I'm not sure that really affects kind of who you thought won or who you thought lost, right? It was just like that was a mess. It was kind of self-evidently a mess.
Isn't that a little bit more both sides-ing the situation than the reality? I mean, like, I hoped to make clear at the top of this podcast that this wasn't exactly like a two-way street on the scat throwing.
It's definitely, yes, more both sides-y than the truth, which is that, you know, President Trump made this a mess. But my point is just that, like, at least not that I'm seeing Claire and Nate to jump in, but I don't think there are, like, I actually haven't seen that much of the, like, oh, Biden wasn't enough of an alpha or any of those type of storylines. And I don't think there were any clips of Biden in particular that would get replayed and replayed that would kind of change the fundamental, this thing isn't going to change the trajectory of the race, right?
I think partly what happens too is that the narrative gets set in the first 15 minutes to half hour. And the first 15 minutes to half hour was very chippy. Biden seemed a little off balance. The stuff Trump said that was more dangerous came in the second half. But I just have seen enough of these debates where like if you were kind of watching Twitter, because it's where the narrative gets formed. It's Twitter, it's not social media. It's like journalists on Twitter, right? The narrative in the first 20 minutes was kind of, oh, Trump kind of has him off balance a little bit, and then it kind of pivoted to like, oh, this is just a really bad debate. And then at the end, it's like, oh, Trump isn't doing anything to help himself, right? But like, the first third of that tends to filter into the leads that news organizations write more than the latter two thirds, right? So the initial weight to like, oh, Trump has him off balance, kind of only gets partly counteracted by the bulk remaining two thirds of the debate that I thought Trump was pretty bad and Biden was fine. But, you know, that's just as an observer of how these things are scored.
So we've been talking a lot about Trump's performance this evening. I mean, one notable thing when it comes to Biden and his coalition is how he responded to questions about things like court packing or ending the filibuster or the Green New Deal. He essentially didn't, I mean, he said he does not support the Green New Deal, but he didn't want to answer questions about court packing or ending the filibuster. I mean, can he just make it to Election Day by never answering those kinds of questions?
I think that's the hope.
I mean, there's so much news, and Trump tends to want to dominate news cycles. I mean, if Trump wanted, I mean, it probably is too late at this point, given COVID and the economy and the Supreme Court, right? Well, this is pertinent to the Supreme Court, obviously, right? If Trump tried to actually drive a make Biden answer for this thing news cycle, maybe he could do it, but he doesn't seem very interested in that.
I think the one thing that Trump's team will probably take away from tonight, I mean, you know, you saw Trump in the moment react to saying something in the climate change section about there'll never be another coal-powered plant built in America, and Trump says, oh, you know, I don't remember exactly what he interjected, but, you know, I'm sure there'll be ads made off of that. You know, Biden hates coal and, you know, whatever is against American industry. Like, you can see little things that they might try to, like, pick off. But I think somewhere around the closing statements, Biden was making this kind of sweeping argument about 206,000 Americans are dead of COVID. It's Trump's fault. And Trump went into his, I've appointed more federal judges than anyone else. And it was kind of like this weird, for me, moment of Trump was kind of making like a conventional, what if COVID had never happened and we had the 2020 election argument, right? Like, I'm good for, you know, restoring the conservative bent of the, or the, you know, balancing out the judicial system in America. And Biden was making the, we're in a catastrophic moment closing plea. And it was kind of this off-kilter experience, I thought, as a viewer.
It's tough. It's really like, I think we're all sort of struggling with just like how to respond to something like what we just watched. It's this really weird mixture of not surprising. So there's not a ton new to say. You know, Trump declined to condemn white supremacists. That's not new. Trump, you know, raised these conspiracy theories about the about mail-in ballots and didn't commit to a peaceful transfer of power. That's not new. But yet it's still I think it's still shocking to see, even if it's not surprising, and I think it's supposed to be. I think it should be shocking. But I don't know. There's two more of these. Fuck.
I actually think it's so damaging. Just for whatever, not to use that terrible word for the discourse, but just like, it was just so weird, and there were so many things happening, and the tenor of it was gross. And there was so much, like, the section on masks and forest fires and climate change, there was just a lot of just raw misinformation and bad facts. And I, a couple of times I kind of wished Wallace had followed up on some of those easy low-hanging fruit fact checks with Trump, particularly about, like, mask wearing. Having two more of those in the next month is, I don't really know how, you know, we're also, people are watching this from other countries, right? And like, it's not a great look for the US to have the presidential election become this, you know, primetime spectacle of like just completely bizarre misinformation.
Well, I'd say two things. Like, one is, my friends were texting this, like, why are they, you know, they have figured out how to mute people on Around the Horn, which is like that sports debate show on from our colleagues at ESPN. Like, why can't they do it for a presidential debate? That might be worth exploring. But between that, essentially, I don't think, and this came out before the debate, where the people who organized the debate, and I think Wallace said this too, they were like, it's not the moderator's job to fact check. If you are willing to interrupt nonstop and are willing to lie nonstop, then the debate is, it breaks the debate.
Well, that's my question. Actually, Micah, do you think that after this debate, the Biden campaign just says, well, we're not interested in any more debates? Like, if you can't actually agree to follow up on the pre-agreed structure of the debate, which is that people can talk for 2 minutes and then you have a more of a freewheeling back and forth. Like, I kind of just think the Biden campaign says, we're leading 7 points nationally. We're not really even struggling in the battleground states at this point. Like, fuck it.
No.
You don't think so?
Nate, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't, first of all, there's this weird premise that, like, somehow this debate is hurting Biden when I don't know that's true. And in fact, the only poll we have so far suggests Biden won, although by about the same margin he usually leads in polls.
Oh, that wasn't the premise of my question. It was more, it was so bad and it was just so chaotic that, like, if the message is going to be that Trump's not following the rules of the debate anyway, why not? Why?
I mean, our friends at the Talking Politics podcast, the UK podcast,
mm-hmm.
one of them had a great quote, and maybe it was a guest, maybe totally misattributing this, but it's a good podcast, so I think it was from them, where they're like, when you press hard on democracy, right, when it starts to bend, then, this is a total paraphrase now, does it snap back, right? But sometimes the moments at which democracy seems to be in the greatest danger are the moments where it proves itself.
Is it a supple birch or a dry twig?
Yeah, but like if you're worried that Trump is anti-democratic and institutions respond to it by A, the voters vote for the candidate who they don't think is anti-democratic, right? And Biden has a huge lead among independent voters right now who might not be as partisan as other voters. He leads independents by 20 points. B, if the court system responds by rejecting what they see as anti-democratic challenges from Trump, or Biden for that matter, but more pertinently by Trump, and not just the usual kind of litigating about, like, okay, when can you extend ballot deadlines to, but, like, you know, if they respond negatively to efforts by Trump to kind of prevent mass numbers of ballots from being counted, right? So you can't kind of presuppose the demise of democracy if democracy at the first chance it gets, Trump is a one-term president so far, responds by rejecting appeals to anti-democratic impulses. You can predict that it won't respond well. I'm not sure the polls, if you are to believe them, bear that out, but the obituary can't be written yet when the system hasn't really had a chance to react. And by the way, in 2018, it threw Republicans out of the House by a pretty big margin. So, and also out of a lot of governorships, although not so much Senate seats.
That's a totally fair point, Nate, and I think it's worth keeping in mind in these last few weeks. But just as we can't presuppose that democracy is a brittle twig, as Claire put it, that will break, I don't think we can presuppose that it's a supple birch either. Birch? Birch branch. Like, there's just too many, there's too many cracking sounds to be really confident of anything.
Ironic that this metaphor of wisdom is coming from our, I don't know how we would describe this, the health of the British civic life, but I think a lot of people would say it is also quite broken.
I don't know. I think glass. I don't think there's any comparison.
I mean, also they had quite a slide for the past, you know, 50 years.
Don't throw supple birch branches in glass houses is the lesson.
Listen, I'm speaking from a point of, like, you know, precariousness in the US, but, like, you know, again, the 50-year slide of the United Kingdom is notable.
Oh, you mean decline generally, not decline in democracy.
Well, you can make that argument too, and I'm sure some people would. But yeah, general decline which I think
now
has,
you're just shit talking the Brits.
I'm saying that it was a system with problems, and also, by the way, you could argue that like a lot of people in the Commonwealth didn't have healthy democratic rights, right? Like, there's lots of whatever. Yeah, you're right. Now I am just shit talking the Brits, so I'll be quiet.
Claire Malone, it's late. The Irish lady wants to talk about the Commonwealth.
Not just, I mean, the Commonwealth is very big. Can talk to some Indians and Pakistanis.
Can we go back to Galen's question, though, just for 1 second? Like, I don't think the Biden campaign will pull out of the remaining two debates. But the reason maybe it's worth them having an internal discussion about it, or maybe conducting some polling about it, is, and I think we knew this going into the debates, I thought Biden did fine on Tuesday night. The other two debates, though, still represent basically only downside for him. And Trump's behavior in the first debates, in the first debate, gives the campaign a credible excuse to pull out of them if they wanted to. Now, maybe pulling out is like more of a risk, has more downside risk than staying in. But it's an, I don't know, it's an interesting question. We should fix the remaining two debates, though. How would we fix them? Okay, moderator has a mute button. They can mute either of the candidates. What else?
The no fact checking.
Well, but the campaigns agree to these rules, right? If the campaigns agree that you can have a mute button, Tony Rihalla, you can do that. I don't think the Trump campaign would agree to that. Whoever who it was who said, was it Claire? I know who it was. Who said Biden has a stutter and maybe they're deliberately trying to rattle him. I think especially in the first 15 minutes where Trump would just be like, I'm just going to filibuster so he cannot actually string a coherent set of thoughts together. It seemed pretty deliberate to me. And then eventually Trump got bored of it or kind of realized that like this wears thin after 15 minutes or Chris Wallace regained some control, right? But it's not the format. It's not the moderator. It's that one of the candidates is Donald Trump, right? And unless you're going to have one of the candidates not be Donald Trump, then it's not really going to fix the problem. I mean, I guess if you actually literally had a mute button, then that would fix the problem. But because he's Donald Trump, he's not going to agree to it, I don't think.
If you had a mute, I would have a mute button, and then I would have an army of fact checkers working inside in a side room and a huge screen in back of the candidates. And anytime any of them said something that was not true, a huge red X would appear on the screen along with a giant buzzer sound. And the mute button.
That would be equally disjointed.
That's how I would fix the debates.
It's like the NBA bubble where someone swears.
It might be equally disjointed, but it would be more disjointed in a more illuminating way, I think. Also, it'd be kind of cool to see.
I don't love the real-time fact-checking idea. And I think it makes the media seem less neutral because, I mean, it gets in a whole meta-ethics conversation. But, like, I think if candidates, like, tell lies in response to a direct question, that's maybe a little different, right? You can say, actually, I know this, Mr. President, and blah, 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 right? But if they're going on and on down the road and going back and forth and like, I mean, and also people do not think that President Trump is honest. Echelon Insights did a poll saying, what are the biggest negatives or positives for each candidate? You can pick a maximum of three because we know you have lots, right? And for Trump, the number one issue is that we don't think he's honest, right? And so, you know, when Trump says something and Biden says something, the average voter tends to trust Biden a little bit more. And it's part of the reason that Biden leads in polls and like a he said, she said, where Trump is just kind of rehearsing his talking points. I mean, we'll see. We only have this one poll so far. I think there'll be more polls of debate watchers, including our poll with Ipsos. So watch for that.
Indeed. I'll also say it's almost Wednesday, so we should wrap things up. But very quickly, does this change the dynamics of the race at all in the polls? Micah, yes or no?
No.
Claire?
No.
Nate?
No, but again, the time is an element here, because if we go another 2 weeks and Biden maintains the same lead, then that's good for Biden.
All right. Well, we will see what happens. Maybe after all of this, It won't matter. Nothing will have changed. But anyway, thank you guys, Nate, Claire, Micah. It's been real.
Can I just give a quick shout out to our the debate live blog team, helmed expertly by politics editor Sarah Frostenson. I thought it was probably our best live blog for a debate ever. Full of analysis and data and charts and smart commentary and funny comments. So shout out to a job well done from the whole team, including the people on this podcast, all of you.
Indeed. We also actually have one more thing to shout out, which is that we have the 538 store up and running with new merchandise, including t-shirts with Fivey Fox on them. I think, Micah, you've already picked your t-shirt out.
I did. I freaking love these t-shirts. There are three Fivey Fox t-shirts, is that right?
And one of them's listening to the podcast.
And yes, one of them is listening to the podcast. They are great. You should go get them. I think you just go to 538.com/store, right?
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's leave it there. My name is Galen Druk. Tony Chow is in the virtual control room. You can get in touch by emailing us at podcasts@538.com. You can also, of course, tweet at us with any questions or comments. If you're a fan of the show, leave us a rating or a review in the Apple Podcast Store or tell someone about us. You can also follow us on YouTube. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.